Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's give it up for the man, the myth, the legend, the one and only Mr. Max Williams. Folks, they call me Ben, as always, with my ride or die, Mr. Noel Brown.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hey, so, thanks for the woo, hey. Max. I'm not used to getting those.
Of course, Daffodil.
Mm-hmm. And so we are coming to you at quite an auspicious time this week because we are welcoming on air, finally, one of our newest research associates, Mr. Jeff Bartlett.
All right, y'all. You know what time it is. It's here for Jeff. Yeah, Jeff is here. Oh, yeah.
Actor, performer, writer here in the Atlanta area, and a dear friend of ours. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I can tell your enthusiasm is infectious, sir.
No, I really am. I'm very happy to be here.
We're happy to have you, my friend. Yeah.
So this is, Noel, this one was kind of a long time in the making for us. We were peeking behind the ridiculous curtain. We were going to record this a couple of different times.
That curtain is so absurd. It's just the color scheme is all out of whack.
Our priorities when we were doing the original budget for this show kind of came back to haunt us. This is like, I don't know if you guys know this, but podcast curtains are kind of pricey.
Oh, yeah. They got to have sound absorptive, you know, properties. And then, of course, you want them to look nice. But somewhere along the way, everything got all ridiculousified, which I guess is on brand. Is ridiculousified a word? I'm going to make it a word.
It is now. It's American English, bro. The world is yours, and that's something that we thought you would enjoy too, Jeff. Now, Jeff, when you're working on research for Ridiculous History, you started off listening to the show, which, thank you, surprised us. But we asked you if there was something that was close to your mind, something you really wanted to come on air and explore with us on Ridiculous History, and you had it locked and loaded, man. We were on a call, and you told us, Michelin Man. How much do you guys know about the Michelin Man?
Because it's such a strange thing. Like this character who has become, you know, a strange version of a mascot. Like, he's not a very likable mascot. I don't know if that's the way to put it. But
I mean, he's got a smile on his face.
He's got a smile on his face.
The modern version. But
he doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, it's like presumably he's meant to be stacked up tires, but exactly. He's also white, and tires are black, and I guess they're those white wall tires that come on, what are those, Ben? Those fancy cars that butlers drive, or I guess, chauffeurs, excuse me.
Yeah, Duesenbergs, Packards, kind of that era
right.
of fancy motor coaches. We're going to find out how the Michelin Man started. And, you know, for a lot of people who have nostalgic feelings about this mascot, you might be surprised by Jeff's statement that the Michelin Man is maybe not a 10-10 dude. Okay, so long story short is our introduction. Michelin Man is the mascot of the Michelin Company, which is now maybe equally known for their opinions on restaurants, but originally was just known for making tires for automobiles, right?
Absolutely, which is very strange because it's sort of like Guinness. They make the beer, they also make the world records. And you'd think it was two different companies, but Michelin, yeah, they do the restaurant ratings.
It came from their travel guide, which was probably like a marketing stunt that then kind of took on a life of its own and then began to become this very sought after status, you know, the Michelin stars and all of that. But it all came from, I guess, just being kind of first to market with that kind of publication, right?
Yeah, definitely. Their whole thing, they were making tires. That was the only thing they did. But hey, if you're going to have tires on cars and people are motorists wandering around for restaurants, hotels, why not rate them? So they did it at the same time. And now it just seems like two completely different companies, but they're not. Same guys.
Yeah, it would be kind of like, I was trying to find an analogy. This isn't a perfect comparison, but it would be kind of like your favorite podcast also doing a separate show just rating microphones, you know, and then becoming known for that, right? They've got 4 out of 5 ridiculousnesses, the Shure microphones.
Ben, don't pitch a spinoff for me to do. I mean, Nolan, I'll take care of that one right there. It's going to be more successful than this show has ever been.
Whoa. Well, maybe it'll just be an episode.
Strong words, indeed.
Yeah.
Ben, for all you know, maybe Ridiculous History in the timeline will just be the episode.
Maybe in the great timeline of all things, Max, our lives are but one episode. So as you can tell, it's been a weird Monday morning for us. I like the idea of timeline, though. What a great segue, because we got to get to the bottom of this origin story. So we've laid this out. The Michelin Man used to look really weird, but where did he come from and how old is he?
Oh, very old. 1894.
So he's just seen the world change as his fellow tire men have died around him. He's wandered the earth alone, lo these many years, claiming victims to stay alive. That's how it works, right?
Definitely claiming victims, yes.
So the way that we know this story, it goes back to a guy named Edward and a guy named Andre, and they're brothers. They're the Michelin brothers, spoiler alert. I don't know how solid this story is, but from what we understand, they're at an auto industry show in Lyon, France in 1894, like you said, Jeff, and one of the brothers says to the other one, "Hey, look at that pile of tires. It looks sort of like a dude, right? Andre, right? You see it, right, bro?
It's like a dude without arms and legs, but
yeah,
still,
he did say that part.
But still like a dude. I don't know.
Got to be something we could do with this, right?
Let's make him into something.
They are Frenchmen, correct?
Yes. So I don't know why I'm giving them a New England.
A Jersey accent.
Yeah, or New Jersey accent.
So these guys, it's important to note, these guys were already in the tire business. They weren't just two random dudes who wanted to go to an auto show. Can you tell us a little bit about Michelin, the company?
Well, the company itself, they definitely started out just making tires. That was their entire thing. No pun left behind. Yeah, they created the company just to supply tires for the earliest cars, which were all white, which is why Michelin Man, every time you see him, he looks like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man or the Pillsbury Doughboy, like a cousin of maybe one of them, because that's how tires were up until about 1915. They were all white.
Because, I mean, rubber, you know, untreated or filled with some additive or other is white, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, the latex from rubber specifically.
Harvested mostly from the Congo region. Just as an aside, lots of rubber trees there. Lots of stories there too, but that's for another time.
Yeah, let's think about this. Right now, if you own a car or you walk by a car at some point during the day, you will see that tires themselves are pretty complex. And aside from some novelties or specific industries, it's easy for us to look at tires and say, hey, these all kind of look the same. I've seen one tire, I've seen them all. But we have to realize that back in the day, before Michelin got in the game, tires were made of different materials, wood, metal, or this is a really surprising one, leather. Especially when you think about how heavy a car can be, that's going to be some pretty strong cowhide, huh?
Gotta be. Even wood surprised me because, sure, there's horse-drawn carriages, you know, in so many different historical references, but wood just doesn't seem like it fits with engines to me. Like, it doesn't seem like a great tire when you're going over, you know, 20 miles an hour or so.
And ultimately, we'll find the reason that tires today are black. But as you said, Noel, rubber in its natural form is white. And you can see this still on some old cars, but they're very fancy, like period accurate cars that you wouldn't see these parking at your neighborhood Quick Trip. So it seems like the Michelin Man evolves in step with the technology of tires. So what were scientists doing that turned tires from white to black?
Carbon black was a material that around 1910 or so, folks were like, hey, these white tires are kind of degrading way faster than if we add carbon black to them. So even though tires by the 1920s were all black, the Michelin Man stayed white. They just never changed him, even though those were only, I don't know, 20 years of tires were white.
Well, traditions are good, you know? I mean,
was it a brand recognition thing, I'm wondering?
Well, the carbon black made tires way more resistant to like temperature changes. The rubber wore down more slowly. It made the tires stronger.
Probably increased traction too, I imagine.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And they even, according to Goodyear, the chemical engineers had found that a tire made without carbon black would likely last 5,000 miles or less. But the carbon additive gave them 10 times more life. And it also made them black.
tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. So, Jeff, Noel, Max, and I, a while back, we did an episode on McDonald's, which was super trippy because we learned a lot about the depth of McDonald Land lore. And it was surprising. I don't know about you, Noel, but it's surprising to me that Michelin Man has its own deep lore, not all of which has aged very well.
Absolutely. His name is, he's widely known as Michelin Man, of course, but he literally has a first name, which is Bibendum, which is
what?
Latin.
Because he was bendy?
For to drink, which, you know, we don't usually associate drinking and driving as a good thing these days, but he was an alcoholic mascot. Basically, for tires.
Goodness. Okay. This is back in like kind of Mad Men rules where it was okay to have a martini, you know, for your morning meeting. Same, I imagine, for a nice drive in the country. You know, the early cars probably came with, you know, built-in bars, I imagine. Is that true? No, I'm just spitballing here.
But yeah, there were so many adverts that were included his first name, Bibendum, which again is basically translates to now is the time to drink to your health. The Michelin tire drinks down the obstacles. Probably wouldn't go over well these days. To drink, to drive. Let's do it together.
Michelin. Michelin.
Yes.
Yeah. And
please drink and drive responsibly.
Yeah. There it is. Perfect.
Exactly.
And it's weird too, because for most of us listening to the show today, you were probably not alive in the late 1800s. I don't want to profile, but I'm just saying statistically, that's my guess. If you are a person who knows the Michelin Man from the modern day, you might be surprised to learn over time, the dude, our boy Bib, has really mellowed out. Jeff, you found that back in the days of old, in his earlier hellion years, Bibendum was known for being made of tires, drinking a lot, and smoking like a chimney, right? He was also a cigar aficionado.
Loved cigars. Was just every single ad, he had a martini and a cigar. And even for a while, he was led as a character being known as the road drunkard, which, you know, doesn't really work out so well these days. But
can I say, no shade on Europeans, but this all sounds intensely European.
It does, doesn't it? To drinking and driving was pretty much almost their slogan for a while.
Let the Michelin tire drink down the obstacles.
Wait, Ben, do you know when it became illegal to drink and drive?
It's a great question. As far as we can tell, I'm kind of spitballing here. Drunk driving, or drink driving, as they were called in Europe, has only been illegal for a little over 100 years in a lot of states in the U.S. And it actually went state by state. And that's why you can see that some DUI or DWI or whatever they're called, some of those laws may vary even today. But as always, don't do it. Don't trust the old Michelin Man. He's reformed. Bibendum does not want you to drink and drive. I think he quit smoking too after a while.
He did, yes. He's a lot more happy looking now. Again, as we were saying earlier, you know, he looks like very innocent. He looks like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. He looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy. But back in the day, he kind of looked scary in a lot of those ads.
Yeah, pince-nez? Is that what they're called?
Yes. Yeah, he had pince-nez.
Explain. I do not know what this means.
The French glasses that are just perched on your nose, they don't really have the
the stem,
the backing, the stems, yeah. And I think he would wear a monocle time to time.
So also he needs vision correction.
Yeah, apparently. And it was also they wanted to portray him as a rich man about town, because those are the only people who could afford cars. I mean, we can argue that's true still sometimes, but he was advertised to the rich, which is one of the reasons that they were like, hey, let's make him look fancy. Let's give him a drink. And then over time, of course, we see him now and he's just a lovable, chubby boy.
It reminds me of a really great sketch on Mr. Show where some kind of marketing guys come into this company and they invent a non-threatening pansexual spokes thing named Pit Pat. And they go, Pit Pat. And at the end he goes, take it from me. I love you. And I think they probably took some inspiration from the Michelin Man, because he is genderless in that he's just kind of got, it's just a flat area down there. He is presumably nude. And yeah, a non-threatening pansexual spokes thing. I like this idea.
And this takes us to an interesting place, because there is this cartoonish quality to the Michelin Man, who is sort of, you know what it was? He's the Dos Equis guy made out of tires. That's what they're going for, like the most interesting man. And what I didn't know about this before we launched into prepping for this episode is that there is another creator who deserves their flowers, their shout out, as Ridiculous News would say, a cartoonist named Marius Roselion. Could you tell us a little bit about this guy?
Well, I mean, he created Bibendum, basically, in 1898. He created this strange character. He wanted to use it for a brewery, which, again, comes back around to the alcoholism of our Michelin Man. And he depicted this man of tires drinking from a goblet filled with nails and broken glass, which seems so strange, but the whole point was to be indicative of how tough and hardy Michelin tires were, and that they would not puncture that easily.
Okay, so he's coming from a really weird place as an origin story already. You know, I can see why maybe the Michelin restaurant guide doesn't have this guy on the cover, you know, shotgunning a glass of nails and chain smoking, you know what I mean? Black and Milds or whatever, which I guess are technically cigarillos. But so if we look at the old Michelin Man and the new Michelin Man, we see those apparent changes. Also ditched the glasses, and now has the big sort of cartoon eyes, right? Are they more expressive, or was it just to make them look less creepy?
Yeah, the early iterations, again, like we've said, he's smoking a cigar, wearing glasses, looked kind of, I would say, like whipped cream.
Yeah, he had a little bit of a dippity-do on the top of his head, almost like a Mr. Softy kind of vibe, yeah.
But not, like, as soft as he looks now. Like, it was a mess. Like, he almost looked like a little mess of tires, whereas now he's more stacked.
Okay, so from tire pile to, like, tire model, this guy. So after hearing all of this in 2022, our fellow Ridiculous historians, especially concerned parents with kids about to drive, might be thinking, this is literally the worst person to be a mascot for driving. You know, you were telling us earlier, Jeff, that he was actually pretty popular when he came out.
Oh, he was very popular. He was beloved. He was Michelin, again. They became almost two separate companies because the Michelin Man, would recommend places to stop. You know, places, you know, you're driving, you're rich, you want to stop at a nice restaurant, let's give him 3 Michelin stars. I actually, you know, now I want to look that up. Is it 5? Is 5 the highest Michelin star rating, or is it?
I believe it is 5. Okay. Yeah.
But that's incredibly high, or that's incredibly difficult.
Rare.
It's very difficult.
Getting like 1 is a big deal. Getting your first Michelin star.
I am wrong. It's three. Stars.
It is 3.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Because 1 is such a big deal. 5 almost seems like a bridge too far. Because even a 1 Michelin starred restaurant is a pretty big to do, a pretty big hullabaloo.
Sells out the restaurant instantly. So 3 Michelin stars. We don't know yet why they landed on 3 instead of 5. But again, we've established they're pretty into traditions. I was surprised to learn that You know what this reminds me of, guys? This reminds me the part we're about to get to reminds me of how corporate entities have started going on Twitter, on social media as their own accounts, you know, and all of a sudden Burger King and McDonald's are fighting. Wendy's drops a mixtape. And if you have not heard it yet, I have to reluctantly give the props. That mixtape slaps. It's undeservedly good. It has no right to be as good.
It's so good that this isn't even the first time it's been brought up on this show. We've brought this up beforehand.
Well, just the fast food social media wars has really become a thing to behold. Sometimes they'll hire some rogue, you know, Gen Z social media buff that takes it a little too far.
There's one I can think of, and I'm going to have to beat myself here. It's a Wendy's posted. It's like an Arby sign. It says, "We have a fried chicken sandwich too." And the caption from Wendy's is, "No one gives a shit."
Wow.
Wow. No holds barred. Okay. So, yeah, maybe one day far into the future, we'll be on Ridiculous History as very old people saying, you know, back in the day, that crazy meme account Wendy's was a fast food restaurant.
And also, a meme was a photo of something posted online.
Also, yeah, exactly. Also, this is back when everybody ate food with their mouths.
It'll literally be that image of the young lady pushing her grandma on the wheelchair. It'll be very meta because it'll be, you know, a meme describing what a meme was back in my day. Only now we're the old lady in the wheelchair, which we're already approaching that.
We've nailed it. Okay, well, at least we know what's coming. No one could have predicted, however, the startling global success of Bibendum as a mascot. I was surprised to learn that Michelin, when they launched this travel magazine in 1907, an Italian travel magazine, I believe, they had a regular column from Bibendum, just sort of like fast food places have a regular Twitter account now. And maybe, I don't know, let's chew on this. Do you think that the public in general was a little less jaded back then as in comparison to the public today when they hear from corporate mascots?
I don't know.
Certainly was more novel because there just weren't as many, you know, and like now it's so old hat that I think everyone's just kind of almost bored by it. And that's why advertisers are having to go increasingly weirder and weirder, like the Burger King, you know, serial killer looking king.
That's true. They really have, you know, we were recently talking about McDonald's on the series, and it's strange what happened with Ronald. You know, he was such a wonderful, cartoonish, wonderful dude, and now he's terrifying. So it's weird that Burger King was able to turn their mascot into something terrifying and lovable. And yet McDonald's sort of lost their mascot for being too creepy, which is a bit strange.
Well, so the tide has sort of turned against clowns because of obviously things like It and Gacy. John Wayne Gacy and stuff like that. So, you know, I mean, clowns as a profession, professional clowns have come out against movies like It, saying that it maligns their profession. And I'm sure to a lesser degree, Ronald McDonald probably didn't help either because he was just so ubiquitous. And, you know, you still will see that creepy Ronald McDonald life-size kind of statue with his arm out on a bench for you to, like, sit with him putting his arm around you. And it's usually at the Ronald McDonald House, which is like a charity for, you know, kids, essentially. So having a creepy clown with his arm around a kid, while, you know, used to be the clown was just the, you know, the bread and butter of birthday parties. And now, because of these associations, it has all these connotations that I think were certainly not intended.
Yeah, I don't have coulrophobia, fear of clowns, but it was startling when I used to live in Central America. There's not the same level of disdain. And it was kind of shocking, you know? I wasn't expecting random clowns. And I was trying to be cool with them. But if you're not expecting them, you know, there's some deep primal psychological triggers for some of this stuff. Michelin Man, I would posit then, is definitely a corporate spokes tire pile and is also fulfilling this kind of jovial clown role. But you might be surprised, fellow ridiculous historians, to learn that our boy Bibendum was, in his column, not doing basic advertising. It's not like he had a column in every issue where he said, let me give you the latest updates on tires. He, in one case, talked about attending a grand ball.
Yes.
And yeah, he's a bit of a Lothario, right? A bit of a lover's lover. And here's one thing he did that might not age well. He was kind of praising and rating women he saw at this ball. Could you tell us a little more about his columns?
He had several columns, love letters almost.
You're like a penthouse letters kind of situation?
Almost.
No, sorry, no.
He had a particular fondness for Italy. A quote of his about Italy. Oh, you sublime Madonna, Rome's destiny. Accept my homage, you whose eyes shine with the splendors of the Renaissance. This is a tire man talking.
Did he write in character? Did he refer to things that an anthropomorphic pile of tires might be concerned with?
He had enemies as well. He had a pretty fiery excerpt trumpeting the crushing impact that his social conquests were having on his rivals, calling them ashen-faced suitors with fixed smiles, living symbols of a shattered illusion. Again, from a man made of tires.
Sounds like a Karl Marx kind of figure there, you know? He's like leading the revolution.
He's coming for the fakers and the haters. So I can see how this would be a really fun read. I mean, obviously it's satire, satire, jeez, Max throwing a boo, but, or a womp womp. Thank you. No. Yeah. Go with the drums. Max Williams, ladies and gentlemen. This is strange. Like, everyone knows this is satire. They know it's a corporate brand. They're laughing at it. And now they're also, on the Michelin side, starting to realize this is an excellent way to communicate with future tire buyers, right? Now, like, that's how you get them. It's fun to read. It's fun to hang out in your mind with Bibendum. I don't know. Maybe he'll recommend a brand of cigar to us in the next column. Maybe he'll tell us what beer is most in fashion in Milan, you know? But how do we get to this idea of restaurants from here?
Oh, it's strangely straightforward.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it so. The Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now.
For such a long time, I was like, well, seriously, Michelin, the tire brand, can't be associated with Michelin, the folks who rate restaurants. But yeah, at the beginning of the tire boom, you know, they had rich people who could afford cars, and they wanted to say, hey, maybe we can do something a little more here and say, these are the restaurants you should go to in your fancy cars that we're providing your tires for. And it seems like a lot of sense at the beginning, but you know, at this point, it doesn't seem connected at all. But yeah, he's the guy. He's the guy. Bibendum is the guy recommending these restaurants. To quote the actual Michelin guide, to help motorists develop their trips, thereby boosting car and tire sales. So, of course, hey, let's do something to boost our tire sales. They started producing a small red guide filled with handy information for travelers, such as maps, information on how to change a tire, where to fill up with fuel, and for the traveler in search of respite from the adventures of the day. So they started rating restaurants. Yeah,
I can vibe with that because, I mean, one reason the Guinness comparison is so astute is that the Guinness Beer Company recognized early on that a lot of people like to debate and argue when there are a couple of cans, or in their case, a couple of pints in. So they got to the game early and they associated themselves with the idea of proving or resolving all sorts of arguments. And then they started to focus on world records. So it's pretty cool that Michelin caught on to this. But from what you're describing here, Jeff, I don't know about you, Noel, it sounds like this was a situation in the beginning where people would buy tires and then they would be given the guide. Is it something like that? Or was it just sort of all around a city?
At first, it just started in Paris. They started giving the guides out with the tires in the 1920s. Including lists of like hotels, restaurants, specific categories like that. And it was a good way to get out of having paid for advertisements in the guide. Restaurants wouldn't have to pay for anything. They could just be listed in the Michelin guide. And both the restaurants and Michelin would prosper without any of them really having to spend money.
Yeah, it does make sense. This is like an advertising coup. It's a win-win, as they would say in corporate American parlance. But now we have to talk, I think, about a dream job. Can we get like a dream job cue, Max? There it is. There it is. I don't know about you, Noel, but I enjoy it. I'm grateful to hang out with our crew on this show. But every so often, I too have dreamed of being a mystery diner. Do you ever want to do that?
It's like a secret shopper kind of, right? Where you go in and pretend like you're a civilian, but in fact, you're there infiltrating the restaurants in order to write a potentially game-changing review that could, up the profile of this place or absolutely crush their dreams of restaurant success. And nowadays, the sad thing is that everyone is their own mystery diner just by virtue of having a Yelp account.
That's true.
Yeah, it is true. But like Michelin got involved with this, right? They weren't sending people dressed as the Michelin man to restaurants, were they? How would you do the soup, right?
He's got no fingies. Does he have fingies? He's more of like a glove, like a mitten, right? Does he? I feel like I can't really picture his digits.
He's got, yeah, that's actually a good question. He has digits.
Oh, he does have digits. Okay, excuse me. Please forgive me for maligning the Michelin man's appendages.
Our pal's been through a lot. So at this point, the reformed alcoholic Michelin man gets a team of human diners who I didn't know the proper term for them until you introduced it to us, Jeff. Restaurant inspectors. I feel like you should get a badge, you know, that you can flash at people at the end of a meal.
Gotta be licensed. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. There should be some qualifications. You can't just have an Instagram account, maybe. But this, so also peek again behind the curtain. We paid for this curtain. We're going to use the curtain more. We have a good friend of the show, Christopher Hasiotis, who is a food critic of note. You knew that, right, Noel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very good taste, that Christopher Hasiotis. I've had the pleasure of dining with him a few times and having him recommend some fabulous restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anytime Christopher gives you a restaurant recommendation, you listen. And if you can get in, that's where you go. And we've got to have Christopher on the show again. But what he's doing, what a food critic is doing, is different from what these mystery diners or restaurant inspectors are doing. They're not supposed to be identified. They're supposed to be anonymous, right? So they're like guerrilla food inspectors, or they're spy restaurant people. Are they the ones who give the stars?
I believe they are. That's the strange thing about it. And I sort of wish it was more like that. It reminds me of Ratatouille, where they're expecting a restaurant review. And so they do everything in their power to help make everything perfect. And that's sort of why I'm not a huge fan of Yelp and such. It exists. It's great. It can be. I like the idea of these secret reviewers, and the Michelin reviewers are secret. They won't.
Even today?
I believe so, yes.
So it could be any one of us.
We could all, maybe we're all Michelin reviewers.
I am actually the Michelin man.
No!
I had my suspicions.
This is just like John Carpenter's The Thing, which I was not expecting in this show. All right, we need a blood test. Max, if you're bleeding rubber, man, we're still going to have to do the show for contractual reasons, but
poke with any implement and see if there's air leaking out.
Yes. Yes, this is not the turn I was expecting, Noel, but I like where we're going with
it's
this.
It's the one we got, though, you know? It's the one we got.
So these guides, or these mystery diners, these restaurant inspectors, they're working with the Michelin Guide, and by 1926, the guide starts to give its points to restaurants. Initially, they're all fine dining establishments. I mean, it's still like always pretty fine dining or very special places. And it was fascinating to find that in the beginning, it was just like they were giving people stars, just like in preschool, you get a gold star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Single stars.
So when did they start adding more stars in?
About 1936. They decided on the three-star system, which is, again, something we were talking about before, because most places rank things by five stars, but Michelin's always been just one to three.
That means that the individual stars are way more valuable than in a five-star system, you know? And so one-star review in a five-star ranking system is a bad review, but a one Michelin star, you know, is very special.
Mm-hmm. I think also with a one Michelin star, the implication is keep your eye on this restaurant or keep your eye on this chef. They're going. Well,
and they don't give stars out willy nilly. It's not like they review every restaurant. And every restaurant gets on that spectrum at all. It's like you really got to be the top notch and the top echelon of restaurants to even rank.
And that's where it really does differ a lot from things like crowdsourced Yelp or whatever, you know, where anyone can give any star to anything for any reason. Michelin will only give you a star or two stars or three stars.
And it's also, it's a legacy thing. Like I said at the top of the show, it's the fact that they were first to market with this type of, you know, guide that they became the authority, despite it seeming like it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The fact they were the first ones to do it. And then they realized that people were paying a lot of attention to it because they were really kind of the only game in town. And then over time, it's just continued to have that impact and to have that kind of cachet. And they've really been good stewards of that because, you know, you can pretty reliably know that if a restaurant has a Michelin star, that it's something to be, you know, taken seriously. And chefs, you know, the top chefs in the world feel the same way. And you can lose a Michelin star too, by the way. They could take it away.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that it's just like the Michelin man just shows up and it's like, I am taking this from you. He just peels it off your restaurant.
Oh. Yeah, like in like Bugs Bunny cartoons where they like, you know, they're literally dressing down like a millet, like a general, like rips off all the epaulettes and the, you know, the general kind of badges and merit badges or whatever
sashes.
Generals have. Exactly.
Yeah, this is, and this is interesting too. This isn't just brilliant advertising for the restaurants. It's also aimed, at least in its origin, it's aimed squarely at people who are on the fence about the expense of buying a motor vehicle, right? Jeff, you told us that 1900, there were fewer than 3,000 cars on the roads of France. The country, the entire thing, not Paris. Imagine Paris alone with just 3,000 cars today. People would be dancing in the streets. But they did this to increase demand for tires, to get people on board with the idea, right? Like in Mad Men, you're selling an idea, you're selling a dream, the dream of driving on the open road. And there's no arguing. They met with great success. I was surprised to find that the Michelin guides have become bestsellers multiple times. Spoiler, I think you do have to buy them now.
You do. They were free at first. It was kind of almost sad with Andre Michelin. For two decades, all that information came at no cost. until a fateful encounter that remains a favorite anecdote repeated today when Andre himself arrived at one of his tire shops to see his beloved guides being used to prop up a workbench.
Oh, no.
Sort of like those AOL discs we always used to get.
I know, right?
Eventually, yeah. They start to lose their value, and you just get them in the mail every week. And people started using those for, like, doorstops.
So, yeah, after that, he started selling them for, I think, 7 francs. Yep. And so that became its own business, and that's sort of why, again, we tend to separate the tires from the restaurant guide, because it doesn't seem like they fit together. But that's why he started selling them at his tire shops.
Nuts. And there we have it, folks, the relatively little known story of Bibendum, the crazy smoking, drinking, and driving tire mascot. Who later learned his lesson and reformed and became a bit of a food critic, a bit of a gourmand, if you will. Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show with us today. We love introducing the team at large to all our fellow ridiculous historians. And Noel, I guess, you know, at this point, we've both learned a lot. We've both been to Michelin restaurants in the past, I know, and we have some of our favorites. But I got to tell you, even knowing all we had just learned today, I still think the original Michelin Man is super creepy, super duper creepy.
Well, you know, we described him a bit, but I did want to point out that as I was looking through some vintage photos, which you can find yourself with a quick cursory goog, he looks more like a mummy than anything. It's almost like a weird square-headed mummy where the tire things look more like bandage wraps than they do what they're intended. And back to my question about the fingies, in the original costume, they just didn't have a gloved part. And so just the human, it had human hands, which made it even more strange and,
that's right,
and creepy. Yeah.
Sexy. I'm feeling it. And also, as we're ending today's show, since Ronald McDonald came up, wanted to give a big thanks to everybody who went to our Facebook page, Ridiculous Historians, and posted pictures of the Ronald McDonald vestiges in their own neck of the global woods. Just like the early Michelin Man, those things are kind of creepy, and we are creeping up on Halloween, one of my most favorite times of the year, so hopefully we can get some spooky stories of ages past on
Wouldn't
the
that
air
be a fun
soon.
Costume? A vintage Michelin Man outfit?
No gloves,
definitely take some
regular hands.
Regular hands.
I bet we could get one.
Carrying a martini.
And smoking a cigar.
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to get the cops called on you if you're walking around in that thing. And you probably deserve it, too.
I was about to say, as well you should. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that thing walking around.
But we do want to hear from you. We want to hear your stories of mascots of yesteryear. The ones that you love, the ones that really freak you out, the ones that you think most people may have forgotten. You can find us on Facebook, as we said, Ridiculous Historians. We're still working on our MySpace, but more news to come. We're probably not going to get a TikTok. I don't think we need a TikTok.
Maybe. We're already talking about how old we are in comparison about the memes and stuff. Us getting a TikTok at this point, I mean, it would just seem like a real like cry for attention, honestly.
Carrier pigeon, telegraph. Thank you, Samuel Morse. Please do contact us.
I mean, we just basically barely figured out Instagram. I'm not ready for another platform. You know, we've been toying with this Pinterest page for years now, and Pinterest isn't even hardly a thing anymore. Maybe in another 5 years' time.
Or we'll hire like a 23-year-old.
Thinking long-term. You know, that's our Event Horizon. I'm just saying that because I recently rewatched Event Horizon. It's amazing.
Dude, that movie, because so you may remember, Ben, when that came out, it was really advertised, speaking of truth in advertising, as a sci-fi romp, you know, through the reaches, the far reaches of space. Turns out, not really a spoiler alert, more of a cautionary alert. It is a gore-fest, existential, dread-filled horror nightmare of Lovecraftian proportions.
Mm-hmm. Lovecraft, yes. Where we're going, you won't need eyes to see.
That's right. it's like Hellraiser in space, basically.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Shout out to our pal Dave Bruckner, who just directed the newest Hellraiser. Good on you, man. Check it out. Let us know what you think. And let us know about these mascots. We can't wait to hear from you. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Thanks to our one half of our new research associate team. Thanks to Jeff Bartlett. And thanks to Zach Williams. No relation. We call him Dr. Zach now. He earned it. And thanks, of course, to our special guest today, Mr. Jeff Bartlett. Noel, thanks to you, man. I feel like a road trip. I'm feeling a road trip to a restaurant, like a weird road trip.
You're welcome. And by the way, speaking of restaurants, I don't think they have a Michelin star yet, but I checked out a new Atlanta restaurant called Di Boca in Boca, or in Boca Di Boca. I forget. It's like a really nice upscale kind of Mexican restaurant that does incredible tacos, and they have like birria tacos, and they do like, you know, tomahawk steak, you know, what is it? Carne asada. It's really, really amazing. Check it out.
And do check out those early pictures of the Michelin Man.
Nightmare fuel. We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and open Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.